As you know, it's been mandated in Australia to be suspicious about China for, well, since the 19th century. You may recall the White Australia policy, so it's easy to forget that not so long ago there was a big thaw. Back in 2014, President Xi Jinping addressed our parliament and Prime Minister Abbott was talking about how much we trusted each other. Now, since then, China's island-building, military expansion in the South China Sea, mass detention of Uyghur people and cyber attacks on the Bureau of Meteorology has changed the mood, and the change in the relationship is easiest to see in the decrease in Chinese investment. What you may have missed in this change is ASIO's new role as China investment gatekeeper, a role the Treasury has traditionally treasured. David Uren has penned a piece on the subject in the latest Australian Foreign Affairs Journal. Joins me now from our ABC Canberra studios in Northbourne. Take us back, well, welcome David, but take us back to 2014 and describe the Sino-Australian relationship then.
So Tony Abbott's first year, he had a couple of things on. One was his trade minister, Andrew Robb, was busily trying to rustle up trade agreements with Japan, with South Korea, and with China. Abbott was characterising all of these as things that Labor had been asleep on the wheel on under his government. Australia was open for business, and business he was going to do. So he was very enthusiastic about sealing a deal with China. The other thing he had on was the G20 meeting in Brisbane. So world leaders were descending upon Brisbane for a major summit, and Xi Jinping was coming, and he was Abbott invited him on to Canberra, so he addressed the Parliament House. He signed the statements of intent around the free trade agreement, and Abbott couldn't have been warmer. He spoke of the true state of friendship between Australia and China.
Well, David, was that state of friendship, in a sense, manifest the next year when we leased Darwin Port to a Chinese firm?
Well, that one sort of rather slipped under the radar when it arose. Darwin had been struggling with to finance the port. The port traffic was expanding. They needed to renovate the thing. They didn't have the money. The Commonwealth didn't want to tip in any funds, so they decided, well, hell, we'll privatise it. And along comes a Chinese private company and says, well, we'll happily take it on.
But David, it wasn't a very good look, was it?
Well, given that Australia had just done a deal with Barack Obama not that long before for US Marines to be based in Darwin, and the whole premise of that was that we were going to be dealing with the Chinese, no, it did ruffle a few feathers.
Now, though, there are other watershed moments in the change. And one was when the Kidman stations and Ausgrid deals were knocked back.
Yeah, so this was very early in Malcolm Turnbull's tenure, and really it was when Scott Morrison took over as Treasurer. And a couple of major investments involving Chinese money were rejected by the Foreign Investment Review Board. The Kidman property, which of course is the largest single land holding in Australia, though most of it's pretty rum territory, not
100,000 square kilometres, 1.3 of Australia's landmass.
Yeah, but only total sales of something under $70 million, which really classifies as a bit of a small business, you know, in the scheme of things. Anyway, it got knocked back. But then more significantly, Ausgrid, the New South Wales telephone, power, poles and wires network, the electricity grid, was being privatised by the New South Wales government. And they got a couple of very good bids from State Grid from China and CKI from Hong Kong. And at the very last minute, everybody thought it was going to go through. The ACCC had said it had no problems with it. Suddenly Morrison came out and said, no, can't happen, national security reasons.
Well, let's cite a couple of them. Ausgrid supplied power to Lucas Heights, to the nuclear reactor, to the Garden Island Naval Base, and to the microwave dishes on Sydney Tower. Once again, perhaps not a good look.
Well, these things had they'd been known about all the way along. There's suggestion that they may have been had something to do with Pine Gap. Others think it might have been something even deeper and darker than that. Anyway, national security prevailed.
What are you hinting at?
Well, I mean, it's hard to, you know, who knows? But we have seen in the past things where Australia is engaged in intelligence activities that even our allies don't know about. I mean, tapping foreign leaders' telephones, for example.
David, I recall that deal's collapse embarrassing the hell out of everyone.
Indeed, it did. And so one of the consequences of that was the government established a critical infrastructure centre so that all...
This being the Turnbull government now, just
this
to
being
clarify.
The term, yeah. This being the Turnbull government. So it put together an inventory of all significant infrastructure in Australia. And it also, there was legislation passed that gave the Infrastructure Centre very great powers. It can demand companies tell it what its outsourcing arrangements are. It can get access to, you know, all sorts of internal government, all internal corporate documents, and can indeed make orders. So it's quite a potent piece of legislation. There's a similar thing being done for telecommunications. So this is really brand new regulation of businesses that may have foreign investment to vet them for their security concerns.
We're talking of a time when, as you point out, the Russian internet-based attack shut down Ukraine's electricity system and the US cyber attack disabled Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity.
Yeah, so and everything these days is internet-enabled, but one of the things that kind of happens in the World Wide Web is that the intelligence services see that an ever-expanding sphere of worrisome connections, that, you know, if everything's connected to everything, well, then nothing is immune as a national security threat.
Okay, let's now factor in ASIO. Tell me why they've taken over front of house from the Treasury.
So Morrison, first off, he appointed David Irvine, who is former head of ASIO and also a former head of ASIS and also a former Australian ambassador to China. So he was appointed as a member of the seven-member Foreign Investment Review Board in late 2015. And then in 2016, he was made chair of the board. So that gave an intelligence filter to the foreign investment decisions that had never previously been there. But then ASIO itself started taking a much greater interest in foreign investment. So until 2014, there'd never been a single mention of foreign investment in an ASIO annual report. But these days, the annual reports are quite vocal on what ASIO terms the foreign investment threat. You know, if you look at the Australian government's official investment policy, it says Australian government welcomes foreign investment, but you've got a major government agency that doesn't welcome it at all, but sees it as a national threat.
Some listeners might recall Paul Keating, and he reckons we've gone down the wrong path with our new view of China. What is his view on our change posture?
Well, he argues that under the Turnbull government, primary responsibility for conducting the relationship with China passed from DFAT, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, over to the intelligence services. And of course, we've seen under the leadership of Peter Dutton, the Ministry of Home Affairs emerge as a major body that now controls all the major intelligence agencies. And it is really the one that is... has the starting point that we need to be highly suspicious of China. DFAT has got a much more nuanced approach to dealing with China, but it really seems like it's the security voices that are prevailing.
David, we know that PJK is worried about Dutton, but he's also worried about John Garnaut. Tell us about John.
So John is, I guess, a former colleague of mine. He was Sydney Morning Herald's China correspondent. He was also a former economics writer for the Sydney Morning Herald. Whilst in China, and he's also son of Ross Garnaut, who is Bob Hawke's chief economics advisor and then ambassador to China. So China runs deeply through the Garnaut veins, I guess. John came back from China with a very deeply jaundiced view of Xi Jinping and his agenda. Malcolm Turnbull, he came back and was working as an advisor for Malcolm Turnbull. Turnbull put him in charge of a review of the intelligence legislation and also with a particular focus on foreign interference. And the upshot of that was...
Forgive me interrupting, yeah. But characteristically, Keating says, once that Garnaut guy came back, they've all gone Burko.
Yeah, he has a flair, doesn't he?
Okay. So some commentators, including yourself, are concerned that Treasury has been pushed out of the vetting and security agencies. We've only got a minute. What concerns you?
Well, the thing is that foreign investment is good for Australia. And China is our major relationship. And I think it's important that voices are heard that talk to the business benefit from dealing with China. And I guess my concern is that that's really being shut out as the security voices prevail.
David, look, thanks for that. David Uren, worrying about national security bodies having neither the interest nor the capacity to assess the positive influence of foreign investment. David Uren is in our Canberra studios discussing his latest piece in the Australian Foreign Affairs Journal.